and it didn't play at that time for some reason, but you can go ahead and start it.
All right. Okay, sounds good. Appreciate everybody coming out. I know it's been kind of a wild couple of weeks in the markets, so hopefully we can give you a few ideas here. What we're going to talk about today is a little, probably, I haven't really gotten a chance to check on everyone's presentation, but from what I gather, it's what we're going to talk about here in the next hour. It's probably going to be a little bit different in that we're actually looking to hedge risk, not take it on, at least with this particular topic. And I'm going to talk about how to hedge a portfolio using futures and options today, but keep in mind, these ideas can be used to hedge positions. So for example, if you're long an E-mini S&P futures contract or two or three or whatever the case is, you could use the strategies that we're going to talk about today to hedge those positions so that the thing about trading is you don't necessarily have to be all in or all out, right? You can be partially in, you can have a foot in the door because we're not always super bullish or super bearish. Sometimes we have opinions in between. And so hopefully you get some ideas here on number one, how to hedge a portfolio or some ideas on doing that. And two, how to maybe even hedge your speculations, maybe your swing trades or things like that. So anyway, my name is Carly Garner. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can reach me at this phone number and this email address. And if you're on social media, please look for us. Twitter, the handle is at Carly Garner. On Facebook, you can just type in DeCarly Trading and we'll pop up. Also on Instagram and YouTube. I do post a lot of hiking and dog pictures. It drives some people crazy. So if you hate hiking and you hate dogs, you may not want to add me to your social media. Believe it or not, those pictures were taken right outside of Las Vegas. I know people think of deserts and cactus and brown when they think of Vegas, but we actually do have some very pretty scenery. I've written multiple books. If you do happen to have an interest and any of the things that we're talking about today, you will find my books on at any major book outlet. Amazon's obviously the most convenient and cheapest for most people. They are available on Kindle or to download as ebooks via Amazon. You don't have to have a Kindle device. You can view them on any device. And the reason I've got these covers up here is because if you go to Amazon, you're going to see 7-8 book titles and covers, some very similar to these. Just ignore everything else. If you're interested, these are the only ones you need. Everything else is like older versions, out of date. We've updated them. They're with old publishers, all that sort of stuff. And also we do have a mobile app, DeCarly Trading. By the way, I should have mentioned this, but I'm a broker. I'm a futures and options broker. DeCarly Trading is a boutique brokerage shop. We're located in Las Vegas, Nevada. We are a branch of the Zahner Group, who's headquartered in Chicago. But anybody that's been to Chicago knows Vegas has better weather. So that's that. With that said, we do have a mobile app if you're interested. The mobile app has news services, news feeds, information, but it also is a way for us to communicate with our clients and trial subscribers in regards to what's going on in the markets, commentary, trading ideas, things like that. So if you just go to the App Store, you can look up DeCarly Trading and it should pop up for you. And of course, I want to make sure you all understand that even though today we're going to be talking about hedging risk, anytime you've got exposure in the markets, there is a substantial risk of loss. Things don't always go as planned. Sometimes things go horribly wrong. That's part of the game. And so hopefully, like I mentioned before, hopefully some of the ideas that I give you will help you mitigate some of your risk. Okay, so what is hedging? Hedging is the practice of taking an offsetting position in a related asset or security to reduce the risk of adverse price movement. Believe it or not, the futures markets were created for the purpose of hedging. I know most people don't use the futures markets for that purpose. Most people are speculating and some people are swinging for the fence and outright gambling and others are doing something a little more tame. But nonetheless, the futures markets were created for the purpose of hedging. The idea is futures and options on futures help shift price risk from the speculator to the hedger. If you truly want to eliminate price risk, you can almost do it, not 100%, but you can almost do it in the futures markets. I also like to mention that hedging is a lot like purchasing insurance. Now, if you're purchasing options as your hedge, it's exactly like purchasing insurance. If you're using futures, it's a little different, but the idea is if you're buying insurance, whether it's car insurance, home insurance, life insurance, you're shifting risk from you to the insurance company, right? So in the futures and options markets, it's basically the same general idea. You're looking to shift risk away from you into somebody else that and that somebody else is getting paid to do so. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. So the perfect hedge does not exist. So a minute ago, I said you can shift risk to somebody else. And that's true. You probably aren't going to be able to shift 100% of the risk. you can shift most of it, maybe 80%, 90%, maybe even 95%, but there's really no way to perfectly hedge any position. I know in theory, on paper, you can do it. And when you, I mean, trust me, when I took my proficiency exam to become a broker, I had to do math programs that involved assuming that there's such thing as a perfect hedge, but there really is not. There's just too many things going on. Anyway, that's a whole nother class. We'll talk about that some other time. But markets are not perfectly efficient. Assets are rarely perfectly priced. Then we have to worry about transaction costs, slippage, so on and so forth. So there's no such thing as a perfect hedge, but you can get pretty close. Here's an example of a near perfect hedge. Now, I'm assuming the S&P is trading around 4,200. I know it never stays in one place for long, but this is just a hypothetical example, obviously. At 4,200, one E-mini S&P futures contract is worth $200,000. So if you happen to have exactly, and you can see where I'm going with this, this is why there's no such thing as a perfect hedge. If you had exactly $200,000 worth of S&P stock in your stock portfolio, maybe it's SPY, maybe it's SPX, maybe it's some other ETF that follows the S&P. And then you sold one E-mini futures contract in, I take it back. I said 4,200 in the S&P, I meant 4,000. So we're assuming that it's at 4,000. Anyway, if you're holding $200,000 in stock that's allocated to S&P 500, and you sold one futures contract, E-mini S&P, you would basically have a roughly perfect hedge. The idea is, as the S&P goes up, your stock portfolio is making money and your futures portfolio is losing and vice versa. So they all balance each other out. It looks really good on paper, but in real life, this is probably not possible. But if it was possible, you would basically eliminate most of the price risk. And you still enjoy risk-free dividends, right? Because you have no price risk, you're making on one side, losing on the other, but you're still being paid dividends. So if there was a perfect hedge in stocks, that's what it might look like. I'm going to put you guys on mute for just one second. I'll be right back. Okay. I'm sorry about that. As a broker, there's always chaos, especially when I'm trying to do a webinar. So the idea is the stock market tends to go up over time. So you really don't want to be fully hedged all the time, right? If the idea of investing, especially in your stock portfolio, is stocks generally go up in the long run, you don't always want to be hedged. Otherwise, you're giving up all your profit potential and you're just making dividends. If you wanted to do that, you could basically just buy maybe the 10-year note or something a little less volatile. So what generally is the best idea is to partial hedge. So this is my opinion and other people will tell you otherwise, but I believe that a partial hedge makes a lot more sense. You may want to be fully hedged if the market's really, really expensive, which I think maybe it might be pretty expensive right now, somewhere between 4,250, 4,260, somewhere in there in the S&P, I think is really expensive. So I think at those prices, you may want to be fully hedged. That way you have no downside risk, or at least not a lot of downside risk if you're fully hedged, and you still get your dividends, and then you can just see what happens. Worst case scenario is the market keeps going up and maybe you give up some of your upside potential, but you're still getting dividends. It's not the end of the world. If the market is really cheap, you probably don't want to have any hedge at all. So you don't have to have a full hedge or no hedge at all. You can be somewhere in between. That's all I'm trying to say. So to do this, you can use futures to hedge by selling less than you own. So if you have a $300,000 stock portfolio and you wanted to partially hedge, maybe you would sell one mini S&P that hedges $200,000. You could also use micro S&Ps and you can incrementally hedge as much or as little as you wanted. You could also buy puts. We're going to talk about this in a minute. I'm not a huge fan of buying puts because buying puts is basically like buying portfolio insurance. And it's great occasionally because every once in a while you might need it. But in the long run, you're going to end up spending way too much money on it. And it's not going to do a whole lot of good. Maybe the best solution is to sell calls and then use the money that you collect on the premium to buy puts. And we're going to talk about that as well. So here's the fallacy of simply buying puts as insurance. It looks good on paper. It's simple. So people like the idea. They just like the thought of knowing, okay, I paid X number of dollars for my put insurance, but below a certain price, I have a floor in risk. And that's nice. You probably can sleep well at night knowing that sort of thing. But the reality is over time, you're going to end up spending way too much money on that portfolio insurance. And you're probably going to do more harm than good, depending on exactly what you're doing. The reason our puts are expensive, puts are eroding assets. And also, puts only benefit the hedger if they're actually offset at a profit. Most traders buy puts. They watch, and even if their timing's impeccable, maybe they put their put protection on at a very good time. But if the market sells off, their puts gain in value and they never sell them, then that hedge literally did nothing for them. So unfortunately, most people that do this, or at least I should say it's been my experience, I can't see everything that goes on in the world, but I believe that most people put their hedge on and then never take it off. And then what happens? The puts expire worthless. And so in the end, it's very costly and there's really no true reward or hedge. It's just throwing good money after bad. So buying put options outright is kind of the equivalent of buying catastrophic insurance. It comes with perpetual costs that rarely pays off. So this is an example. Of course, the S&P is always moving and the VIX is always changing. The cost of the insurance is always changing. But this gives you a pretty good idea. An S&P, an E-mini S&P put with 60 days to expiration, if the futures are trading at 41.50 and you purchased a 38.50 put, so we're talking a good 200 points out of the money, you'd pay 45 points for that. That means it doesn't actually benefit you at expiration, assuming you held the expiration, unless the market was below 38.05. So you're putting a price floor on your portfolio under 38.05, but that's not much of a floor, right? That's the market has to drop 250 points just to get your break-even point. And you spent 45 points or $2,200, $2,250 to do that. So you might think, well, let's buy a 3,600 put. That way it's just catastrophic insurance. If something really terrible happens, I have a put in place to protect me. Well, you're going to spend almost $1,200 on that option, and it's only going to help you if the S&P is below 3,577. So that's going to obviously a pretty big tumble in the market just for you to get your money back on that insurance. Now, this is not unlike insurance in any other aspect of our life. We constantly buy insurance that never pays off. So you should think of portfolio insurance in the same way. The market almost always goes up. So you don't want to be constantly spending a ton of money on insurance that's rarely going to pay off. I'll show you a better way to do it. And again, when I'm talking in this context, I'm talking about hedging a portfolio, but you could have used the same idea to hedge a long futures contract. So just to kind of sum this up, the cost to insure a $200,000 portfolio on a decline of roughly 300 points for 60 days is about 1% of the portfolio or 4% annually. The cost to insure against a decline of 550 points or more is about 0.5% or 3% annually. So this type of strategy of continually buying puts is a really big drag on a portfolio. I mean, over time, I know in the last couple of years, this hasn't really been the case, but throughout history, the S&P has generally returned roughly 9, 10, 11%. So if you're taking 4% or even 3% out of that to purchase insurance, that's no good, right? It doesn't make any sense. Now, of course, if you're only executing the hedge when the market's really expensive, you're probably going to, I would assume, you might end up doing a little better than that. But of course, what we think is expensive today could become cheap tomorrow. Nobody has a crystal ball. So here's an example of what a long hedge put might look like. This was a few months ago, but it gives you an idea. So purchasing the March 3700 put when the S&P was trading at roughly about 38, I think it was about 38.50 at this point, it's going to cost $37 or $1,850. So, you know, that's a good chunk of change. Again, puts or calls for that matter, options in general are eroding assets. So every minute that goes by that something doesn't happen, that option's slowly losing value. So again, you don't want to just continually throw money to have insurance, because while it might make you feel a little better, in the end, you're literally doing yourself more harm than good. So your risk control measure is actually creating more risk. Obviously, that's not what you want to do. So with that said, if you do decide to buy puts here and there, sometimes they pay out nicely. I'm not going to say you should never do it, but try not to do it in an oversold market, because the price of these options is based on the VIX, right? Or based on implied volatility. If the market is selling off, everybody and their dog at that point wants to buy a put. They didn't want to buy it when the VIX was low. They want to buy it when the VIX is high. And so it pumps up the value of those options. So you end up paying more for your insurance than you should have, more than it's probably theoretically worth. So try to buy puts when the market is high, not low. In this particular case, a trader buying a 3,700 put for $37 is basically protecting his portfolio under about 3,660. So under that level, it's almost like a price floor in their portfolio, assuming they have about $200,000 worth of S&P stock. If the market just completely collapses, anything under 3663, roughly, It's kind of smooth sailing. You don't have to worry about your portfolio, but you don't want to be the type that just hangs on forever because, as we mentioned before, options are eroding assets. And even if the market goes, or even if your hedge pays off in the short run, it doesn't do you any good if you never sell it. This is an example of what that option looked like. The trader in the previous slide purchased the option for 37 points. That was his insurance. At one point, the option was worth 80 points, meaning it doubled in value. So I'm just going to round here. He paid roughly $2,000 for the option. Suddenly, the option was worth $4,000. If he decided to do nothing, to just sit there and live, live stress-free because knowing his portfolio is protected, this option eventually expires worthless. So not only did he lose the $2,000 that he originally used to purchase the option, but he lost the $2,000 in profit. So that's a $4,000 swing on your hedge. Meanwhile, the stock market went up right after. Yeah, this is, by the way, this is just a few months ago. This is the March correction that we're looking at. So as the stock market's going up, that's great. Your portfolio is doing better, but you just cost yourself $2,000. And if you want to count what you lost on your hedge, you cost yourself $4,000. So your portfolio actually is worse off by putting the hedge on than it would have been without the hedge at all. So the only way to do yourself any good is to take your hedge off at some point. Now that's scary because you don't ever know exactly where the market's going to turn around and start going the other way. That's the hard part. But even if you only hedge yourself in a correction partially, that's better than no hedge at all, or it's better than holding onto your hedge too long and letting it expire worthless. So you can also hedge with a short futures contract. This is a much simpler and more efficient way to do it. But once you sell a futures contract against your portfolio, you're basically locking in, you're basically eliminating the price risk. And that's assuming that you're holding $200,000 in your stock portfolio against every futures contract you sell. So for example, if you have $1 million worth of S&P stock in your portfolio and you sell 5 futures, you've completely eliminated all of your price risk. Now, again, that's not always a good thing because the market almost always goes up in the long run. So you don't want to have a full hedge on all the time. But sometimes if you're uncomfortable and you don't want to create a taxable event, this is a good way to do that. So especially with some of the new tax laws that are coming around, I'm not going to opine on that, but if you don't want to actually sell your position and lock in the gain and then pay taxes on it, you could simply sell futures contracts. And that way you still hold your overall position. You still collect the dividends. You don't have to pay the tax that you were dreading to pay on that stock portfolio, but you've locked in your price risk. And so if the market goes down from there, you make money on your futures and lose it on your stocks and vice versa. So if you wanted a perfect hedge or close to, you could sell futures instead of buying options. With the futures, there's no time value erosion, so you don't have to worry about that. Someone mentioned that it would require a lot of margin to do this. Now, just to put this in perspective, the margin for one S&P or one E-mini S&P is about 12. It fluctuates, but it's about 12,000 right now. So if you wanted to sell a futures contract in your futures account, let's just say one, to hedge your stock portfolio, you'd probably want at least 20,000 in the account. You may have to add a little more if things get volatile, but that's probably what you're looking at. If you were selling 5 futures contracts to hedge $1 million account, you probably want at least 100,000 in the account. But again, the minimum to have in that account is 12,000-13,000. Now that'd be probably a little hectic when it comes to wiring to meet margin calls and things like that. Nobody needs that in their life. So there are micro E-mini contracts now for the S&P, the NASDAQ, the Dow, and the Russell. And these contracts allow you to pinpoint your hedge. So let's say you're just starting out in investing and your portfolio is 20,000 but you still want to hedge, you could use the micros. One micro S&P future is going to be roughly $20,000 worth of stock. So if you have a $20,000 account holding some sort of SPY or SPX or some sort of mutual fund that's allocated that way, and you wanted to hedge your risk, you could sell a micro in your futures account and do it that way. The NASDAQ micro is roughly $13,000 worth of tech stocks. The Dow micro is about 26,000 worth of tech stocks. The Dow is about $17,000 worth of Dow stocks, and the Russell's about 11,000. So even if you had a portfolio that had a little bit of everything, you might want to use a combination of Russell, micro Dow, micro NASDAQ, so on and so forth to hedge your price risk. So you can do that. You don't have to go full on with the E-mini S&P. Another thing to keep in mind is, let's say that you have a stock portfolio that you want to hedge that's about 250,000. You could sell one S&P mini, which is roughly $200,000 size contract, and then maybe sell a couple micros in one of the others, and you can do a pretty efficient hedge that way if you really wanted to. Is free insurance possible? I think we all know the answer to that. It's not, but there is a way to basically use the market's money to purchase your insurance. And so let me explain how that would work. Is it free on all aspects? No. It means you're giving up something, but you're not giving up money. So we'll talk about that. Okay. So this is, in my opinion, a smarter way to hedge a portfolio. Now, you don't want to do this if the market's already in a drawdown. So today, the S&P is at 4,200. If in the next couple of weeks, the S&P sells off to, 3,500, you absolutely do not want to do this type of a strategy at that time. At this particular time, with the S&P around 4,200, I think it's a perfect time to do it. So here's the idea. Instead of just buying puts outright and using our own money, we can use the market's money by selling calls above the market. This is called a risk reversal. So you're basically buying puts equivalent to the amount of stock exposure that you want to hedge. And then you are selling the same number of calls to pay for that. Now, you can get creative. You can sell two calls and buy one put. You know, there's no rules on this kind of stuff. It's whatever you're trying to do, what your expectations are, what your needs are. But the result is basically getting free insurance, or at least insurance without any out-of-pocket expense. The expense is not monetary. The expense is an opportunity cost. It's forfeiting any stock gains above the strike price of the short calls. Someone just typed in collars. Yes, this is a collar. And again, you could do this with a futures contract. If you're long an E-mini S&P future, but you're a little nervous about something really weird happening, like, for example, flashback to March 2020, when the market corrected faster and harder than it ever did. You could do something like this. You're long an E-mini S&P, you sell a call above the market, you use the money that you collect on that call to buy a put underneath the market. Now, it's not perfect because you're giving up your upside gains above the strike price of the short call. But the nice thing is you're still giving your futures contract some room to move on the upside for it to gain in value. Or if you're doing this to hedge a stock portfolio, your stock portfolio can still have a little bit of upside room to gain in value, but you're taking away the catastrophic risk and you're doing that without paying for it. So that's the key, especially when the market's expensive like it is now. The risk is the market could drop 20, 30, 40%. I'm not saying it will. I'm saying that's the risk. And then your upside potential is what? Maybe another 5%. So when you start getting in that sort of situation where there's a lot of downside risk relative to the upside potential, that's when something like this makes sense. So again, free insurance does not mean free insurance means no out-of-pocket expense, but there are other costs. The other cost is opportunity cost, and that is capping your profit potential on the stock portfolio or the long future, if that's what you're doing, above the strike price of the short call. There's a margin cost. The futures brokerage, wherever your account is housed, is going to require that you cover the margin to being short a naked call. Your futures broker doesn't care that you have a stock portfolio somewhere else offsetting that risk. They just don't care. It's not their concern. What they want to make sure is you can meet your obligation with the brokerage and the exchange, and you have enough margin to do that. This is even true if you're trading with a broker dealer. There's some brokerages out there that handle both stocks and futures and options on futures. Now, I have opinions on that. Of course, I'm biased because I am a commodity broker. We only deal in futures and options. We specialize in it. We don't offer stocks. In my opinion, brokerages that offer both are cutting corners. They're not excelling in one thing, or if they are excelling in their stock brokerage, they're probably just offering futures and options on the side. It's just not what they do. And they're probably not that great at it when it comes to margining. And anyway, that's another conversation altogether. That said, even if you have your account in one place and you're trading both asset classes in the same place, they're treated as two separate accounts. So if you have your collar on in, or your risk reversal on in your futures account, and you have your stock portfolio in your stock account, your broker is still going to force you to have enough margin in the futures account to hold that position. Depending on how aggressive your risk reversal is. The margin could be anywhere from $5,000 to $12,000 per contract, per $190,000 to $200,000 worth of S&P hedged. So again, if you're hedging a $1 million portfolio, you probably want $100,000 in your futures account to do that. Or if you have a $20,000 portfolio, you could hedge that with maybe $1,500 to $2,000 in a futures account using the micros. There are micro options as well. So you could do this strategy with the micros as well as the e-minis. So here's what it would look like on a chart. This is the same example we looked at just a few minutes ago, but instead of buying the March 3700 put outright and paying 37 points for it, or roughly 2,000, I'm in a round because it's just easier. Instead of paying about $2,000 for that hedge, suddenly we are getting paid to put that hedge on because we're selling a March 4,000 call right here. We're selling this March 4,000 call for 42 points. We're using that money to pay for this put. So suddenly we have portfolio insurance at 3,700 and it didn't cost us anything. The only thing it costs us is if the market goes above 4,000 before expiration. Honestly, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I don't think it did. I'm pretty sure the S&P dropped and it took a little while to get back up. So this hedge would have been executed actually at a very nice time had someone actually participated in that. We just, in the previous slide, we just noted that the S&P dropped to 3,700 and that the put option, it doubled in value. So somebody that put this trade on might've done very, very well, assuming that they were savvy enough to get in at the right place and then get out at the right place. I'm not saying that's easy to do. I'm just giving you an example of how it might work. They might've made $2,000 on their long put, and that short call probably would have lost almost all its value. So they might've picked up another $2,000 there. So that would have been a very successful hedge that had zero cost to the trader other than giving up gains above 4,000 in the S&P before the March expiration, which is the third Friday in March. So someone's asking if this is a vertical spread. It's not a vertical spread. It's a basically a risk reversal or a caller. So you're buying a put and you're selling a call. That put you're purchasing is your portfolio insurance. Because remember, you're holding, assuming you're holding $200,000 worth of stock in your stock account, you're buying this March 3700 put to put a floor in your portfolio, just in case all heck breaks loose. You don't want to lose money if the S&P drops below 3700. At least you want to have a backstop there. And then you're using the short 4,000 call to pay for that. So you got free insurance, free in terms of money. Again, let's say that the S&P didn't correct here. Let's say the S&P just melted through 4,000 and went straight up to 4,200 and you still had this position on, you would have missed out on that 200 points in gains. So the margin on something like on this particular example was about 9,000. Again, the margin is, most people don't understand, they expect margin to be a static figure. It's not. The margin could be, if the S&P rallied from here, the margin could be as high as 12,000-13,000. If the S&P drops from here, the margin would actually go down. And believe it or not, margin fluctuates with the market in real time. So margin is not a figure that's absolute. Some people don't understand that and they get upset when they start selling options and putting these types of hedges on because they don't understand what they're doing. But the reality is, don't rely on an exact margin figure. Just understand that it's going to fluctuate. The margin on a risk reversal or a short option is probably never going to be higher than the margin for the futures contract. So you can kind of use that as your rule of thumb. And I want to remind everybody that timing matters. Putting the hedge on is only part of the battle. Some people get sucked up into thinking because they're hedging, timing doesn't mean anything. It's a hedge. Who cares? That's really naive. If possible, hedges should be put on when you really think you don't need them. For example, right now, the S&P is just melting up. It feels like there's no risk at all, right? But when the market's like that, the risk of being long and wrong is increasing as the market melts higher. Also, hedges should be offset or reduced as the market moves lower. So as the market moves higher, you should be thinking about hedging. As the market's moving lower, you should be thinking about taking profits on any hedges that you did execute. If you never exit the hedge, there is no benefit or point of doing it. It's adding to your risk, not taking it away. This is an extreme example, but it's definitely something to be used as a lesson. This is so the red bars represent the June of 2020 S&P 2600 put. The black bars represent the June futures contract. Now, in mid-February, the market was melting higher. It felt like literally, I think most people just assume there's no risk in stocks, a lot like what things feel like right now, right? Nobody can lose money. It's impossible to lose money in stocks. That's the mindset. I'm not saying that's a true statement. I'm saying that's what people are operating on at this particular moment. When things change, they change really quickly. So if somebody was savvy enough to have purchased a 2,600 put prior to the sell-off, they would have been able to purchase that put for roughly $10 or $500. So again, this is an example. I'm not saying anyone did this or whatever. I'm just giving you an idea of how these options move. So somebody that purchased $500 catastrophic insurance, just in case the S&P dropped like a rock in mid-February, would have seen that option go from $10, which is $500, all the way up to about $500 in premium, which is like 24 grand. So I'm going to repeat that again. That option went from $500 to $24,000. So that would have been the epitome of a portfolio hedge, right? If you would have exactly bought it at those two prices. Of course, nobody's ever going to pick the very high and the very low. That's just not how we work. We're humans. We don't know what the future brings. But the reality is, as scary as it would have been to take this hedge off somewhere in between, you still would have been better off having it than not having it. So let's say, for example, someone bought it for 10 points and then sold it for 100 points, which would have been a profit of roughly $4,500. We'll just round it. Even if you sold it here and then watched all heck break loose here while the S&P was dropping, you still are $4,500 better off than you would have been had you not done anything. And even worse, if you would have held all the way through the drop at this particular point with the S&P trading at, it bottomed out somewhere around 2000 and this option going for about 24,000, you might not have had the guts to sell that and just let it ride anyway. So if you held on to that, you would have eventually saw that option lose all of its value. So it went from $500 to $24,000 here to zero. So again, timing matters. Just because you put the hedge on doesn't mean your work is done. You have to actually sell the hedge at some point. Otherwise, there's literally no reason to do it. Your portfolio recovered, hopefully, because in this situation, hopefully with the insurance, you didn't panic or do anything. So that's all great, but you're still $500 worse off than you would have been had you not hedged at all, if you let it go, if you didn't ever take a profit. So taking profits matters, timing matters, even when you're hedging. Timing is truly everything, even when hedging. And especially if you're using this sort of a strategy that we talked about, where you sell a call and you use that money to buy a put, the risk reversal. If you do it when the market is moving higher, you're going to have much better odds of it actually working out for you. And this is because when the market's moving higher, the calls are generally overpriced, which means you're selling calls that are overvalued. And the puts are underpriced, which means you're buying puts that are cheap. So this results in better insurance. There's a higher cap on your profit potential because you can sell calls further out of the money for more money. It gives you a higher level in which downside protection kicks in because you're buying cheaper puts at better strike prices, and you're less likely to incur margin issues in your futures account. So if your timing is good, and you put on a risk reversal when the S&P is really high, again, I could be dead wrong, but I'm thinking somewhere between 4250, 4260 in the S&P, we could maybe run into trouble. We're not that far away now. So this is the time to start thinking about this sort of a strategy. You want to hedge when you can, not when you need to. If you wait until the house is on fire to buy insurance, you're going to have a really, really tough time. It's going to be very stressful. And as we all know, when we're participating in markets, whether we're hedging or speculating, it's a mental game. And if you are hedging too late, you're putting yourself under more stress than you needed to. That stress is going to cause poor decision making. Trust me, we've all been there. We all do it. We're human. And in order to survive, we need to remove a lot of those human tendencies, which is panicking and getting greedy and so on and so forth. And we can do that by simply being aware of what the risks are, not what the risks feel like today, but maybe what they might be next week. So just because everything seems easy peasy, smooth rolling today, doesn't mean it's going to be down the road. I appreciate everybody coming. I hope that you got something out of the class. I know I'm a little early. So if you have any questions, you can type them into the chat box. I'd be more than happy to answer those. Let me just go through the kind of my last spiel. If you have any interest whatsoever in trading futures and options, please visit our website, decarlytrading.com. I mentioned we are a brokerage, but even if you don't use us, there's a ton of information on the website. There's like 40 videos. There's all kinds of trading articles, all that kind of stuff. You can sign up for a free trial of our newsletters. We do write newsletters roughly 2, 3, 4 times a week, depending on what's going on. They include market commentary. They include trading ideas, support resistance levels, things like that. And if you're interested in option trading or this particular strategy that we talked about today, the risk reversal, we go into more detail in my book, Trading Commodity Options. You can visit the website, tradingcommodityoptions.com, and find a bunch of information there. You can actually even read sample chapters. And does anybody have any questions? I thought it would take me a little longer to get through those than it did. Once again, here's my contact information. I mentioned some videos on our website, but our YouTube channel has just as many, or actually probably a few more, that talk about anything from the very basics of what are futures contracts to some more complex things such as option spreads and butterflies and that sort of thing. I guess since we have a couple extra minutes, we can talk about today. I was on Bloomberg TV with Abigail Doolittle. We were talking about option trading. She has a segment that they call Options Insight. And I do it once every week or every other week or so. I pop into the show and talk about option trading. And today we were talking about natural gas. Natural gas has had a pretty big run up here in the last couple of days because of the overly warm weather and those sorts of fundamental issues. But the reality is natural gas has really had a hard time staying above $3 since like roughly 2014. We've had a couple big rallies, but they've proven to be temporary. And it's come back down. The sweet spot for natural gas has been about $2.50 to $3. So I would expect that just as temporary as this weather pattern rolled in, I think it might roll back out. Seasonally, natural gas tends to sell off a little from here. So we were talking about that. We were also talking about crude oil. Very similar things going on in crude oil. Crude hasn't really had it hasn't spent a lot of time trading above $65 since 2014. 2014 is when the US dollar switched from kind of a bearish stance to a bullish stance. And right now we're sitting right on the cusp of support, which I do believe will hold. If the dollar holds like the high 80s, the dollar index, I think it'll put some pressure on commodities, including crude oil. And that would kind of be in line with what we've seen in a long-term crude oil chart. Crude really got a couple runs above 65, but it just hasn't been able to hold it. And so I think we're starting to get really long in the tooth in crude oil. One idea that we put together was a butterfly spread in crude oil, buying the August 68 puts, selling 2 August 65 puts, and then buying a 62 put. You can do something like that. I mean, it's a little complex for it to just be blabbing out in a class like this. I apologize. But the idea is it's a butterfly spread. There's limited risk and it's really cheap. So it's a way to get into crude oil, playing the downside without worrying about if we get some sort of a blow off top that runs up to 75, you really have no risk other than what you paid to get into the spread. So a butterfly spread like that is about $400 in cost and risk before you consider transaction costs. And you can make as much as $2,500, $2,600 if you get really lucky and crude oil comes back down and lands right at 65 when the options expire in about 37 days. So that's just something to think about. Okay, somebody's asking if we only stay with commodities. So we are a futures and options brokerage, which means we deal in products across the board. We only deal in futures, so we're not dealing in stocks. But yes, we do like S&P futures, treasuries, currencies, energies, meats. Believe it or not, we have a lot of clients that are trading meats and grains. The grain market has just been unbelievable this year. Not necessarily in a good way for everybody. Some people have done very well, but metals. We have a lot of gold and silver, copper traders. So yeah, we do not deal in stocks. Like I mentioned before, again, take it with a grain of salt because I am a futures broker. So I'm obviously a little biased when it comes to this, but I do think if you really, truly want, if you're serious about trading futures and options, you really want to go with a broker that specializes in that, even if you don't choose us. And the reason being, if you're going with a broker that offers a little bit of everything, for example, they have stocks, they have futures, they might even have Forex, they're probably not overly good at anything. And if you call them, if you do get someone on the phone, they're probably not going to be able to answer any of your questions about futures. I mean, even simple things like, what time does crude oil close? They can't answer that question. And so trading's hard enough to not have to get simple answers. Somebody's mentioning that Bank of America is forecasting $80 crude. I did see that. And I also saw, I think it was, I won't say JP Morgan, I could be wrong. But one of those were also looking for $80 to $100. And they may be right. To be honest, they're probably the same people that were calling for crude to go under five back in April, May of 2020. So I don't know. And I've been around long enough. I was trading where I was in the business anyway, I should say. In like 2007, 2008, when crude oil was approaching $150, literally everyone and their dog assumed that $200 was just going to happen. There was no question whatsoever that crude was going to $200. And guess what? It peaked at $150 and dropped to $30. So crude oil is kind of a wild animal. And it tends to go up pretty steadily when it's in an uptrend. It's really, really hard to stop it. But once it starts going down, kind of like stocks, escalator up, elevator down. So I do anticipate that the dollar is going to rise. I do believe that we're kind of putting in just a bit of a double bottom here. If you look at a weekly chart, we're retesting lows, but there's a lot of support levels here. That doesn't mean we can't spike a little lower. Maybe we even see 88 or 87 in the dollar index, but I think those types of moves would be temporary, and then I think they'd reverse it itself. One thing I've learned is when everybody thinks that one thing is going to happen, the market tends to do the exact opposite. So there's very few dollar bulls out there, which makes me think the dollar is probably going up. Very similar idea in treasuries. Everybody's short. Nobody believes treasuries can go up. And honestly, we probably saw the start of a decent rally today. We'll know in a few weeks, but that's my thought. Someone's asking to repeat the crude butterfly trade. So this is a low risk way to get into oil with no margin, limited risk, and it's using the August options. They expire in about 37 days on July 15th. Buying the 68 put, selling to 65 puts, and buying the 62 put. The idea is you want crude oil to land somewhere between 68 and 62. If it does, the trade pays off something. If you're lucky, and again, these butterfly spreads, it takes a little luck to get the max profit. In fact, it takes a lot of luck to get the max profit. So you really, when I say the max profit, it's just kind of a goalpost, but you should definitely not hold out to the very end to try to get that, because it rarely happens. So the idea is if it lands somewhere between 68 and 62, the trade pays off something. If it lands at 65 at expiration, the trade would pay off about $2,600 minus transaction cost. And to get into it, last I checked, I mean, I've been doing this class for a little while, but the last I checked the quotes, you should be able to buy it for 38.40. So meaning your risk is $380 to $400 plus transaction costs. And you might make $2,400 to $2,600 if everything goes very, very smoothly. Realistically, on a trade like that, if you picked up a $700 to $1,000 profit, I'd say take it and run. I wouldn't hang on and try to squeeze out the last few dollars, because crude oil can move. This is a $3 spread. Crude oil can move that in one day. So sometimes when you're trading these kinds of spreads, you see everything looks like it's going perfect, going into expiration, and then one day wipes it all out. So you don't want to be greedy. Okay, someone's asking what's required to trade the micro E-minis. The minimum to open an account with us is 2,000. Each brokerage is different, so you can obviously ask around. But I'd say that's probably pretty standard, is at least 2,000. Some brokerages want a lot more. But the margin on, just to give you an idea, the margin on the micro E-mini S&P is about $1,200. So with a $2,000 account, you're giving yourself some room to play around. And I think the micros are really, really great to kind of practice and paper trade. Although it's real money, it's not probably not like life-changing money. You're probably not going to ruin your life trading the micros. So it's a really good way to take it one step beyond paper trading and kind of test out your strategy. And as I mentioned, there are micro options. So you can do exactly what we talked about today. You could put a collar together. You could buy a micro futures contract, sell a call option against it, buy a put, and just kind of see how it works. You'll get a night. The thing is, we can talk about these things all we want. We can read about them in books. We can throw charts out. But until you're actually experiencing how the market moves and how the options change in price, it's kind of hard to really grasp the concept. So it's a really good way to get in and practice and get used to things. Okay, someone's asking for the butterfly legs one more. So it's buying the August crude oil 68 put, selling two August 65 puts, and then buying an August 62 put. The package should run you about $400 or 40 cents. Okay, any other questions? We're starting to run out of time here. Okay, looks like that's it. If you do have questions that I didn't answer, I missed, or you think of it later, there's my email address on the screen. So feel free to send me an email. You can also call me. However, I have an appointment, so I'm leaving right now. But email me and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. And again, I hope I see you on social media, unless you hate dogs. If you hate dogs, then again, my page isn't for you.